Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another episode of Fireside Chat.
Thank you, Beasley, and those familiar guitar riffs tell us that it's time once again for another season of Fireside Chat and another season of Flames Hockey. As usual, I'm Dan Stevenson, along with my co-host, Matt DeBorg. Matt, how's your summer been?
Awesome. Got a lot of work done and ready for hockey season to begin once again.
Fantastic. We got a lot to talk about, so let's jump right into it. We're going to try and go kind of chronologically since we chatted last, and I guess the biggest news of the summer was some of the signings that had happened. We talked about some earlier. We talked just after July 1st opened, and we got some of those signings done. But why don't we talk about the signing of the captain, the contract everyone was worried about, Mark Giordano, and the Flames got it done. I don't know about you. I was surprised that they got it done this early because he still has a year left. But we got our captain locked up for $6.75 million a year over 6 years. What are your thoughts on that deal, Matt?
The one thing that I was always worried about with Giordano was overpaying him in terms of the cap because of the fact that the Flames are going to have to re-sign guys like Gaudreau and Monahan and Bennett, and there's only X number of dollars that you can have. So I was worried that the Flames might overextend themselves because he is the captain and the most vital part of the team, and instead, they managed to lock him up for long term for a rather reasonable rate at 6.75. So I have absolutely no problem with that contract whatsoever.
It's weird. It's like Brad Treliving has a superpower, being able to sign big defensemen for great contracts. I mean, if you look at the Dougie Hamilton deal, $5.75 million. You look at Brody's deal that was signed in the past, which was $4.65 million. And now you look at Giordano, who's going to be getting about $6.75 million. You know, those are all great, great contracts. Like, I don't know what this guy's doing, but he's signing fantastic contracts for all of his blue liners.
Yes, and having those three locked up for only $17 million, that will allow the Flames to be able to afford the proper forward depth that they need to be a cup contender.
And that's a good point, too. I mean, this is something I haven't heard talked about a lot in the hockey media, if you will, but if you take a look at the players whose contracts are going to be coming up soon, we've got, Sean Monahan, who's going to need a new deal soon. We've got Johnny Gaudreau is going to need a new deal. And I think the sole fact that Giordano took quite a discount from what he's probably worth is going to play into those guys' contracts. You know, I think the Flames brass is going to be telling them, look, the captain did it. You know, we're expecting you to do it too. So I think it's probably going to set a precedent for money saving all the way from, you know, the net outwards on this lineup.
Well, they only have to point to the Chicago Blackhawks and their current problems with their cap. And the Flames are built in a manner that they could mimic the Blackhawks' success. And if the Flames can keep all their guys for a little bit less than what they should be paid, that will allow them to keep all of their depth instead of having to shed their second and third lines like Chicago had to do twice, and that'll allow for more sustainable success instead of having a couple of years where you're in the wilderness because you had to trade like everybody instead of being able to keep all of those guys.
Very true. Looking at Giordano, he's 31 now. He just signed a six-year deal, and he has 1 year left. So this deal will be over when he's 36, 37, somewhere in there. Do you think this is going to be his last NHL contract?
I think that he'll probably get another one- or two-year deal after that. It's hard to tell. He's been banged up most years.
That's my worry. So yeah, I don't know if he's going to make it that long.
Yeah, it's one of those things that the injury problems might just go away and he'll be healthy the rest of the time, and in which case he'll probably play until he's 41, 42. It might not. We just don't know. It's too far in the future to tell.
He could be the next Chris Chelios. So overall, I think if you look at the media, if you look at the fans, if you look at everyone, there's no one that doesn't think this Giordano deal is good. I mean, even other GMs are looking at it and have commented that the Flames got a heck of a deal. So good on them for being able to get that deal done and getting it done early. That's, you know, just over a $2 million pay raise for Gio, which I think he definitely has earned. And, you know, it's good that we got it done and we have that faith that he's going to stay around and we didn't need to wait till the offseason next year to get that done. And I don't know, it's always nerve-wracking when your captain's not signed.
Exactly. And they got it out of the way, so it's not a distraction all year, like how the Gaudreau situation was. Like, oh, is he going to sign with Calgary? We remember that nonsense on Calgary Puck and that. And, you know, now we can focus on, okay, now how do we build this team into a Stanley Cup contender instead of worrying about the best defenseman going away at the end of the year.
And it's sort of interesting, if you look at the way that the salaries are structured on the blue line now, you've got Gio is going to be making 6.7, you got Hamilton who's going to be making 5.7, and you got Brody who's going to be making 4.6. So it's kind of weird how the Flames have their top three defensemen all within about $1 million of each other.
Yeah, and it's good budgeting by Treliving to make sure that any success moving forward will be sustainable for a handful of years, like the next 5 years, instead of a one-off or a two-off.
And the other interesting thing, and I didn't realize it till I'm just looking on Cap Central, Hockey Buzz Cap Central, but Brody, Hamilton, and Gio all have contracts that expire within a year of each other. Brody's expires in 2021, Hamilton's in 21-22, and Gio's in 22-23. So it's kind of interesting how they've got that, you know, they're not all going to expire at once, but they're all kind of coming up within a certain period of each other.
Yeah, and if you think that, like, say, like TJ Brody continues to emerge as a top defenseman and Hamilton as well, then with those contracts expiring first, you can either move another contract that you have, like one of the forwards or something, or you could eventually move Giordano, especially if he does regress a bit in the latter stages of the contract. So there's flexibility one way or the other.
Yeah. Going into this coming season, 2015-2016, we have 4 guys that are going to be making more than Giordano. Michael Frolik, Dougie Hamilton, Dennis Wideman, and TJ Brody are all going to be making more this coming year. But after that is the contract.
Well, actually, Brody makes $100,000 less this season.
Oh, does he? Okay. Yeah, I'm just going by this number, which does 4.6. So
actual dollars, it's $100,000 less.
So then 3 guys that are making more. But after this, by far, Gio is the highest paid guy. And I think that's the way it should be.
Yeah, for sure. Your best player should be your highest paid.
The next contract that got signed after Gio was one that I was surprised how many people were worried about this contract not getting done and how many people had crazy ideas of it. But this was Michael Ferland, and Ferland signed $825,000 for 2 years. And I was hearing numbers from fans, from analysts, from all sorts of people all over the board on this one. Some people said, oh, the Flames should sign him to a contract north of $1 million. Some people said he should get entry level. What were you thinking was a fair number for this one, Matt?
I was thinking close to the league minimum on a one-way contract because of the fact that he did have such a good season, the end of the season and the playoffs, that I think he played his way onto the team. But you don't sign players that have 30 games under their belt for more than $1 million, no matter how good they had. Because that could just be a flash in the pan, like a guy like Fernando Pisani, who had a great playoff in 06 and then did nothing the rest of his career.
Well, that's exactly it. And, you know, I think this city has fallen in love with Ferland, which is great, but I think it's kind of clouding judgment of what he actually did. You're definitely right. You know, he played 26 regular season games last year, had 2 goals and 3 assists for 5 points. He looked good in the playoffs, but we had a lot of guys in the 04 run that looked good, and I'm glad we didn't sign to that kind of money, a guy like a Commodore or something like that. You know, so yeah, I agree with you. I think that there's no way it should have been north of $1 million. I think 826, 825 is probably about right if you look at other guys in the team and what they're making. But I was expecting it to be less. I was expecting it to be somewhere in the 700 range.
Yeah. And realistically, either way, it's perfectly fine, the dollar amount. It's under the threshold, like if you sent him to the minors, that it wouldn't even count to the cap. So that's perfectly fine in my books.
Yeah, and on that, it is a one-way deal.
So he will be getting paid either way, but it just wouldn't count to the cap if they sent him to the minors, which I don't think that they would anyway.
And when you look at that number in relation to other players on the team, and this is what I've been trying to point out to people, it does make sense. He's going to be making $825. If you look at guys like Drew Shore, who's making $850, Marcus Granlund, who's making $760, you got guys like Morrison at $925. You got Poirier at $860, Klimchuk at $860. So his contract is right around where everybody else's is. So as much as we might think it's maybe a little bit rich, it falls in line with other prospect forwards.
Oh, for sure. And it's nothing to sweat either way. It's a cheap contract for a player that will probably play on the fourth line this year. So that's about right.
And I like that. I was hearing that Ferland's people wanted term. They wanted a longer term deal. And I think that 2 years is about right. You know, we saw him in 26 regular season games. I mean, if you remember, David Moss looked good in his first, 20 games with the Flames too. So I think for 2 years, we can say, is Michael Ferland worth a bigger contract? He's an RFA at the end of that, so we still maintain his rights. And hopefully he plays himself into a million-plus contract after that.
Exactly. And come back in 2 years, if he progresses like, say, Lance Boma has, then sure, he gets a bump in pay. If not, then there'll likely be some other forward that's ready to take his spot if he hasn't already been bumped out of the lineup as it is.
And Lance Boma's a good comparison, because I heard people saying, well, if Boma's making 2-2, Ferland should make 1-8, and I'm going, the guy doesn't have the body of work to prove that.
Yeah,
he's popular, but we have to separate popularity from performance.
Yeah, Boma's played a long time, and that's why he's worth the 2-2.
Well, and not only has he played a long time, he's shown consistent increases.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's not just like, oh, this guy had one good season, here's a crap ton of money. He's shown us year after year he's constantly getting better, and we're making an investment. Some might argue that Boma is a little bit overpaid now, but I think the investment's going to pay off by 2017-2018 when that contract expires.
Yeah, and the mantra of always earn, never given, it applies in this situation. And Ferland hasn't earned it yet. Like, he earned the one-way contract, but he hasn't earned the dollars to go with it. And that's up to him over the next two seasons to show that he is able to elevate his game and be an NHL regular. And then you'll start seeing him getting 1.5, 1.8.
Well, I think you have a good point there. He hasn't earned much, and to me, he hasn't even earned a roster spot with the Flames for next year. He's still got to fight for that.
Oh, true. For sure. And that's the thing. The Flames have like 17 forwards in camp. Three at least are going to get cut. So, you know, it's up to him to earn one of those spots.
And considering he's a guy who can still go down, I believe, without clearing waivers.
No, he can't.
Oh, really?
He has to clear waivers, yeah.
Okay, so that does make it a little bit easier for him to stay up here then.
Yeah, I do believe only Marcus Granlund is the only player that can clear waivers. Or, like, doesn't have to go through waivers at all. So, yeah, pretty much everybody else is. So I would expect at least a couple of trades. But that will show itself over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. And the last contract that's been signed over the last little bit was the Flames signed their other... It's weird. You think of them as first-round picks because they were our first picks, but really, we traded our first-round picks. So one of our top two picks this year, in Rasmus Anderson, who signed a three-year entry-level deal. I haven't seen the numbers confirmed anywhere, but I think an entry-level can be up to 1.25.
I have no idea.
Okay, so it's a cheap contract either way.
Gaudreau's was like 1.85, but that was because of like all the performance bonuses and all that stuff. So.
Yeah, I think Gaudreau's base is 925.
Yeah, I think that's the max, okay. And then it's
so it's going to be somewhere in that 900 to a million area. Which, you know, for a player who, even though he's a second round pick, he was really, you know, one of the top picks for the Flames, makes sense.
Yeah, and the way he played in both Penticton and last night in at Winsport, he showed that he is worth a top level contract.
And because Anderson's only 18, the Flames have two options. He can come play here in Calgary, or they can send him back to Barrie, I believe. Those are their only two options. He can't play in the AHL or the ECHL. Do you think that this signing means that Anderson's going to get a good look, or do you think it's just a standard, we want to get our guys under contract?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think he will get a good look just to like boost his, you know, you're coming along good. Being encouraging to him, I don't think that he'll make the team. I'd be shocked if he did. But, you know, it would be an encouragement to him that, like, here's what all the other NHL players are at. That's their level. You know, this is what you've got to work on to get there.
And we'll talk more about training camp in a bit. But the one thing I think is cool on that note is that I think that we're going to see quite a bit of competition between Anderson and Shillington, kind of as the top two prospects who are both defensemen. I think that it's going to be really interesting to watch that and see how that dynamic plays out.
Mm-hmm. And they're both very smart offensive defensemen, so we'll see.
I think they're almost competing for the same spot.
And honestly, I don't expect either of them to play in the NHL this season. But
no, and looking at the makeup of our blue line, I don't know that there'd be a spot for both of them.
Well, I didn't expect Juris to make the team last year either, so, you know, who knows? Players can surprise. It wouldn't shock me if he did, like Anderson, but, you know, it would be a surprise.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes over training camp. And with that, why don't we jump into camp, unless there's anything else you want to talk about with contracts?
No, I'm good.
So training camp, rookie camp has been on. We covered the Flames rookie development camp in the summer, and this past week they've had the rookies in Calgary doing some workouts, and then they sent them to Penticton for the annual rookie camp. Matt, you were watching the rookie camp games. What did you think of the team's performance overall in those games?
I thought they got off to a good start every game, and they just kind of ran out of gas each time, and you could see that in the scoreboard with both the Edmonton and Vancouver games. They led in both, and then they just let the lead slip away. I thought the goaltending performances of both Mason McDonald and Jonathan Gillies were above average, and that they were the two best goalies in the camp for like all the four teams. Other than that, the players that you would expect to be good were good. Like, guys like Klimchuk, Poirier was all right. Bennett, you could see he was just getting warmed up.
In that Edmonton game, I was really happy with what we saw from Bill Arnold. I thought that he really stood out.
Guys like Rasmus Anderson, he played really well. Shillington, he played well. Andrew Mangiapane, he played well. Karnikov played well. So, like, there wasn't, like, anybody that stood out as, like, a severe disappointment from any of our draft picks.
And overall, you know, you're right. There's no one that was disappointing. And overall, I think it's good that we're continuing to see some production out of these guys. I didn't get to watch a lot of the games, but I watched the Edmonton one, and I watched part of the Winnipeg game. And even from where some of these guys were in the summer, especially the first game against Winnipeg, I thought that it's amazing to see some of the development in just a few short months and how much some of these guys have been able to improve since even seeing them scrimmage in July.
Yeah, like Anderson was the guy that he jumped up the most, in my opinion. And like he was good in July, but he was a lot better at both the Penticton tournament and against the Dinos.
I thought it was interesting here, just going through some notes that I have from the Winnipeg game, that the Flames' power plays were Agostino, Bennett, and Poirier. I thought that was a really interesting lineup there. I liked the Bennett and Poirier chemistry, but I guess I thought it was interesting that Agostino was on the wing with them as well.
Yeah. Well, you got to try different combinations because you just don't know if somebody is going to magically click with a player that you wouldn't think. And, you know, like, I don't think a lot of people thought that Craig Conroy would have the chemistry that with Iginla, considering Conroy was only a third-line center with the St. Louis Blues. And, you know, he came to Calgary, played with Iginla, and they were great for all those years. So it's one of those things that you just never know until you try it. And if it doesn't work, then you just try somebody else.
And speaking of Agostino, I was quite happy through both games I saw with what we saw from him. Kenny Agostino is a guy that I've wanted to like since he came here because of what it took to get him here. I mean, he was part of the Iginla deal, and I feel like the expectation on him has been so high. But to me, he's always just been a marginal AHL player. But especially in the first game against Winnipeg, I thought that he was playing really hard, and he had a really nice breakaway chance in the third. And I guess it was just kind of nice to see. It's like, wow, you know, maybe this guy's coming around.
True. And, like, I'm also was encouraged by Morgan Klimchuk's play. That was the draft pick that we acquired for Iginla.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good. You haven't really seen too many players step back. They're at least making positive step forward. Whether that continues and they become NHL players or not, that's still to be seen over the next year and a half, 2 years. But
well, and we position ourselves well because we don't need to rush any of these guys through right now. I mean, you know, it's not like we're saying crap. We need, you know, one of these young guys to step up on the blue line. We have, as an organization, the depth we need at all levels to say, take your time, take as much time as you need, and let us know when you're ready.
Yeah, and like the Flames are walking in with 17 forwards, 7 defensemen, and 3 goalies. Like, they don't need anybody to stand out and, you know, step in because, like, they only have 5 defensemen. They've got enough. It's just, it would always be better if you have somebody coming out of the woodworks that does come up and steal a spot like Jurist did last year.
Yeah, but it's not like we're, you know, going to a guy like Anderson or Shillington and kind of saying, hey, we really need you. Like, you know, make sure you're ready for the season. If it takes them a year or two, that's fine. We've got that time right now.
Exactly. And that's all part of having a lot of depth overall, is that you're not having to rush and shoehorn somebody in that isn't ready.
Yeah, depth, and I think also, and a lot of people don't think about this, but also fan interest. I mean, if you look at a lot of markets where there's not a lot of fan interest, sometimes I think that especially high draft picks are forced onto the team to sell tickets. And so we're so lucky in our market that we don't need to do that. We don't need to say, hey, look, here's Shillington, buy some tickets to see him. We can give him the time it takes to develop him correctly.
Is that a pot shot at Edmonton?
I actually wasn't thinking about Edmonton, honestly. There's other organizations. I mean, Edmonton's a fairly good hockey market. I think that's a mismanagement in a different way. But especially in the States, we see a lot of these smaller market teams, I think, rushing, you know, top three picks, not top three, but like first three rounds onto the roster when you go, maybe this guy could have used a bit more seasoning.
Yeah. Like a guy like Sasha Barkov in Florida, as an example. Like, he wasn't ready the year after his draft, and yet he was playing in the NHL. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's good that we can say, you know, okay, we don't need you to be ready now. Like, you develop at your pace. As long as you're not going backwards and we're seeing an upward shot, you develop at your pace. We'll check in with you next year and see how it's gone.
Exactly. Here's the things that we want you to work on. Do this, 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 and that, and see you next year.
Exactly. And we have that luxury of being patient as a hockey organization.
Yeah. And we've seen that with a lot of the players, like especially the guys that we talked to back in July, where they were saying that like the Flames gave them a checklist and things that they have to work on. And it's a good thing.
Talking about guys that we talked to in July, many of the players from that rookie camp in July were invited back to the rookie tournament, and the Flames have let a handful of them go. Some of them we'll talk about have been brought into main camp, but the Flames let go of Jason Bell, Jason Fram, Julian Perlew, Thomas Sustal, and Eric Waugh, who is a Flames draft pick but was here on an amateur tryout contract. I wouldn't be surprised if Waugh gets signed by either our ECHL or AHL affiliate, just because there's some ties there. But Any of these guys surprise you they got let go?
Not at all. And actually, I disagree with you on Eric Roy. There was one play yesterday where he was like the last defenseman back, and the pass went to one of the Dinos forwards, and he went in on a breakaway, and Waugh didn't even turn around to skate for him at all. Like, it was a really pathetic effort on his part. I would not expect him to get a contract offer from the Flames at all.
You often talk about how, you know, we can convert a defenseman to forward. Now, I've never been for that idea, but I think if there's one guy sort of in our system who that makes sense for, it might be this guy, Eric Waugh, Eric Roy. I'm not sure how you say his last name, but he just, when I look at him, I think this guy might be able to make it, maybe not in the NHL, but, you know, ECHL or AHL, if you were to convert him to sort of a defensive forward.
I don't know. I think that there would be better options out there for that than, like, I would rather the Flames sign, say, like, Ryan Wilson, who they brought to camp, or one of the other guys on a PTO, than bother with Waugh. I think you could find somebody else.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens with him and his career, but I mean, he's a guy that's been around here for a while now, and it's sort of weird to see him on the list of guys released.
Well, it's one of those things, it's always earned, never given, and he didn't really step up and earn it, or even like show anything worth mentioning, so in a positive way. And when you're an invite to a training camp, you need to stand out in some way.
Speaking of invites, guy that we saw invited to the rookie camp in July last year and this year was Jason Fram, and he was invited to the rookie tournament in Penticton, and they let him go. And I think Fram's sort of an interesting case. He's been at both camps in July. You and I have evaluated him twice. He's an overager playing in the WHL, but he goes kind of up and down. There's times at camp where we saw him and he looked good, and there's times he was invisible. And you can tell that the amount of times the Flames have brought him in and, you know, given him a chance, they want this kid to be part of their organization. But like you said, he's just not cutting it.
Yeah. I think they'll give him another go next year, because I don't think he'll get signed by anybody else. But I think that he improved from last year to this year. He was a lot more consistent, especially defensively. But you need to see more, and whether that turns out or not, who knows?
Yeah, I think that if he doesn't get signed next year, I think the Flames pretty much have to give up on him. I mean, you know, if you strike out three times, it's not worth bringing him back year after year after year. Find another kid and start bringing him in. But Sustal didn't impress me in July. He didn't impress me this time. I don't even remember if Jason Bell was here. Like, I don't even recognize the name. So, you know, none of these guys were really impressive, and that's why they were the first ones let go.
Yeah. Bell was okay, but nothing to write home about. He was just there. He didn't do anything wrong, but he didn't do anything right either to, like, stand out. So it doesn't surprise me that they released him, and he might be another one that might come back next year for another go-around in the development camp / Penticton and that, and see if there's anything there.
Yeah, you never know. He's still a fairly young guy. He's a big guy. He's a 6'2" defenseman. I think that Jason Bell was probably also a victim of circumstance. If we didn't have Shillington and Anderson, maybe would have got another look, but I feel like we've improved our defensive depth so much in 1 year that he was just kind of the odd man out. And he plays, for those that don't know, he plays for the St. John Sea Dogs of the QMJHL. So not a player that we get a lot of chance to see in Calgary, but I know the Flames have quite a few Eastern scouts now, so they've probably seen quite a bit of them. And I guess the last, not really part of the Penticton tournament, but the last game that was part of the rookie camp, if you will, was the Flames versus the UFC Dinos. And no surprise, the Flames won 5-1.
6-1 technically, because they did play a 5-on-5 overtime, and or 3-on-3 overtime, and Ryan Lomberg scored.
Yeah, and they just did that to show off the format to the fans, but it wasn't actually part of regulation. you went to see this game at Winsport. Let's start with this. Any dinos that stood out to you?
Not particularly. The only guy that scored as a familiar name to Flames fans, Coda Gordon, was the guy that scored. And he was mostly invisible. Like, I didn't even realize that it was him that scored until checking the box score after the game. None of the players stood out. The goalie was, despite giving up 6 goals overall, he actually was pretty good. It's just the team in front of him was rather horrible. So
Coda Gordon, for those that don't remember, was a 6th-round pick in 2012 for the Flames. And, you know, you're saying they're terrible. You got to remember, too, that the academic year is just starting, so I doubt that the Dinos have even probably played a game together with this roster.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And it's just in the past 2 years, the tournament has been a lot more competitive between the Flames and the Dinos, but this one, it was a complete mismatch.
Yeah, I don't follow the Dinos a lot. I'm a Sate man myself, so I follow the Trojans a little bit, and I'd be curious to, I think it'd be neat 1 year to have the Flames rookies kind of do a tournament against the Dinos, the Mount Royal Cougars, and the Sate Trojans. And maybe if they didn't have the Penticton rookie camp, that'd be something they'd do, but I think it could be kind of a neat thing, even to switch off the school every year. But yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, the score is 5-1. The shots were 29-18 in favor of the Flames. It's about what I was expecting. You know, you've got guys that are obviously NHL quality against players that are not. I mean, if you're drafted by the NHL, you're generally not playing Canadian college or university hockey. Maybe US, but it's what you expect from these two teams.
Yeah, and Pavel Kharnikov was the best player, I think, for the Flames in the game. He scored twice and had an assist and was very good at protecting the puck from the defending forwards. All around, it was nice to see all of the Flames' 2015 draft picks play well. Like, even Riley Bruce had a good game. So it was just nice to see some of the guys, like especially guys like Anderson and Shillington. They played well. Mangiapane, he actually threw a big hit in the second period, which was amusing considering his height. But yeah, it was a good effort by everybody.
So far in the rookie camp, what have you thought of Keegan Kanzig?
He's a work in progress. Like, his skating has improved significantly, but now the onus is on him to improve all the other aspects of his game in addition to his skating. He was okay, not very good, but when the Flames drafted him, I don't think that they were expecting him to be ready in 2 or 3 years. I think it was more like a 5, 6, 7 year project, and if he continues to improve, like, as much as he did from last year to this year, and does that same kind of a jump next year, then you might start seeing him being a possibility in a year or two of being an NHL player. But that's on him, and we'll just have to wait and see. He's looking better, but it's a long way to go for him yet still.
I hate to say it, but he's not a good skater. And from what I saw, the game and a half I watched, really his mobility or lack thereof was what prevented him from being a contributing member to the game. I felt like he was slow and he was miles behind the play, and it really made him stick out like a sore thumb.
He still needs a lot of work in quite a few different areas.
I think that for a lot of his career as a kid, he was able to get by as the big guy. And I think now you're starting to see, especially with the way the Flames are playing, that just being a big kid isn't going to get you a job. So I think of all the prospects, he's the guy who really has to do the most work to define who he wants to be and what his identity is.
And it's one of those things that it'll be a patient waiting and seeing, because at the very least, he would be a good player to have in Stockton just to be a physical defenseman, sort of like what Nolan Jonkman was for Adirondack last year. So Like, even if he doesn't progress, he would still be a useful player in the system just for that fact.
Yeah, I could see him being a guy who'd be in the system for a couple years, but I just, I don't know. I think that, especially with some of the defensive depth we're seeing, I think that he's one of the few guys that's going to, who's going to fall down the depth chart this year. And I think we might see him go the way of Hanowski, who just is unimpressive and doesn't get qualified in a few years.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And it's one of those things, it's always up to the player to improve. And you don't know what a player's ceiling is until they hit it. And he might have peaked right now, and this is all you're going to get. Or he might improve and become a decent NHL defenseman. Just, it's too early to tell. And that's the thing with a lot of players, is it's still too early to tell. There's worrying signs, like a guy like Patrick Seeloff, who's hasn't improved in the last 12 months, really. And Kanzig, who still has a mountain to climb, that, you know, the time is getting a little nearer to the end for those two players in the Flame system. But you have to be patient and see if they're improving. If they're not, then by all means, go on to the next player. But,
and if it was a few years ago, I think Kanzig might have been kind of brought along just because he was the guy that was there. But with the new regime in place and with the new kind of, you know, mantra of the Flames, if he's not doing it, they're not going to say, well, you've been here for a while, let's just, you know, give you a contract. It's going to be, hey, you didn't earn it, you know, you're on your way.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Competition always breeds the best results. And for years in the Flames system, it was like Eric Nystrom and David Moss, and that's all you had.
Well, especially on the blue line, we haven't had a lot of spectacular talent, so he probably would have snuck in there, where as a forward, maybe he wouldn't have.
Yeah, but now we have guys like Shillington, Anderson, Morrison, Hickey, you know, Gilmore, Wotherspoon, Culkin, Kulak. You know, there's guys there. So, you know, you don't have to rely on, oh, Kanzig must develop into an NHLer or else. It's one of those things that if he does, great. If not, we have eight other guys that might do a lot better of a job.
One of the guys I mentioned earlier I was impressed with, and have heard a lot of people impressed with, is Bill Arnold. And I think he's kind of an interesting player to study his development. He was the sidekick to Johnny Hockey in college. He never really got that look as the number one guy. And even last year, at the beginning of the season, you and I, and me especially, both thought they'll probably put them both in the AHL and put them together. And I think that with Bill Arnold last year playing on his own, he's really had to develop himself as his own player and not rely on being, you know, Johnny Hockey's sidekick. And he was known in college as being a very defensive forward. And I think even at the end or the beginning of last season in the AHL, we saw him in that role as well. Kind of that's what he fell into. And I feel like we saw him slowly showing more and more offensive talent throughout last year. And based on how much ice time he got, I think the Flames are starting to say, you know, we're seeing a lot more offensive production out of this kid, and they're obviously very happy with what he's doing.
Actually, for all the players that didn't play in the NHL last season, Bill Arnold is my dark horse to make the Flames.
Yeah, so, no, I would agree with you. I think that he, if there's any player that didn't get an NHL look last year, he might be the Josh Juris of this year, if you will.
Yeah, his defensive game is top-notch for somebody his age. And his offensive contributions are coming along steadily. And with the fact that the Flames have to move out some contracts, I wouldn't be shocked if the Flames decided to move a guy like Matt Stajan and put Bill Arnold in the fourth line spot instead.
Yeah, I could see that. I could also see the Flames using him almost like they used Granlund this year, of making him the first call-up.
Yeah, that could be another thing. Like, it would depend a lot on what's available on the trade market, yada, yada, yada.
I also just look at it, and I kind of think, you know what? I think that Arnold might be better served playing a top role in the AHL than playing a third, fourth line role in the NHL on a nightly basis. So maybe you keep him down there for another year. Again, there's no rush, and say, okay, we got an injury. Come on up, play some minutes, and then head back down.
Yeah, exactly. I have no problem with that either. Like it'll be one or the other. He's going to play in the NHL regularly this season, whether that's from day one or sporadically as injuries occur, it'll be one or the other.
Yeah, but I was really, again, I only saw a game and a half, but I watched some clips online too, and I'm really impressed by what I saw from him.
Yeah, he was a standout in the UFC Dinos game as well. And he set up Morgan Klimchuk's goal with a nice pass. So he was quite effective at both ends. And he's been really solid. So if the Flames didn't have the depth that they do, he would be a lock to be an NHL player. It's just when you already have 17 players and you're number 18, it makes it a little hard.
Well, Matt, anything else about the rookie camp you want to talk about?
Nah, I'm good.
Then why don't we transition to the main camp? Now that rookie camp's over, the Flames are bringing everybody in, bringing all their veterans into town, and they start the rookie camp tomorrow on Friday, September 18th at Winsport. And they have three teams for training camp. We won't go through all the names of every team here and who's on what team, but pretty much, you know, the guys you expect. All the usual faces. I thought it's interesting that they are running three teams. That kind of makes it weird for scrimmaging and stuff. And they've decided to name the teams after Flames veterans. We have Team A, which is Team McDonald. Team B, which is Team Neuendijk. And Team C, which is Team McCrimmon. And I thought, what a weird choice to go with McCrimmon. Like, you think they would pick guys who were in the rafters. Maybe that would be, you know, Team Vernon or Team McInnes. I just thought, what a weird choice to have McDonald, Neuendijk, and McCrimmon.
Yeah, it's whatever they want it to be. And
oh, of course. I also wonder if it's a bit of foreshadowing. Maybe we know who our next forever Flames going to be.
Well, he was a good player for the Flames, so I don't really have a problem with it either way. So
if we look at the breakdown of the main camp, the Flames have 64 players in camp, 7 goalies, 21 defensemen, and 36 forwards. So this is going to be a full camp.
Yeah, a repeat of last year.
And speaking of last year we saw the Flames bring in Rafael Diaz on a part-time tryout contract, and I was not expecting them to bring in many veterans this year. I thought it was going to be a full camp as it was, but they've gone out and brought in three players on part-time tryout contracts. Ryan Wilson, who was with Colorado last year and has actually been part of the Flames organization in the past. Aaron Johnson, who he's been part of our organization too, hasn't he?
Yeah, he was traded for Steos.
That's right. And then Douglas Murray, who he was here practicing with the team last year, but never actually suited up for the Flames, is going to be back.
That was actually written into his tryout last season that he would be invited this year as well.
Okay.
So.
And then on top of that, the Flames also have some rookies who are going to be coming. Tyson Bailey, who we saw in the summer and we're both very pleased with. He made it through the cut at rookie camp. He'll be here. Ryan Lomberg, who's been signed to an AHL deal in Stockton, will be here. Taylor Burke and Mason Marchment. Mason Marchment, again, we saw in the summer. I didn't think he looked all that great in July, but apparently the Flames see something they like. Mitchell Hurd, who's a Stockton contract. Nick Schneider. Blair Riley and Loic Marcotte are both Stockton players as well. So an interesting smattering of pros looking for jobs, unsigned players looking for jobs, and AHL guys that aren't a Flames contract but are looking to potentially get one.
Yeah. Nick Schneider, he's a goalie, and he played in both the Penticton game and the third period in overtime in the UFC Dinos game. And for a walk-on goalie, he was actually quite impressive. And he might actually be worth a contract. So of the walk-on guys that aren't signed to either a PTO or a Stockton contract, I think he's the best.
Yeah, I don't know if the Flames would use a contract on him, but you might definitely see him get an AHL deal.
Yeah.
And right now, if you look, we do need another goaltender in the AHL. We've got Gillies, who's expected to start. But we got nobody behind him, as far as I can tell. So Nick Schneider, who plays in Medicine Hat, he might be a good guy to bring in there.
Yeah, he didn't look bad. So that's always an encouraging sign if a goalie's looking decent. So
I'd have to go out and see who's available, but I wouldn't be surprised come Stockton camp, and I'm surprised it kind of didn't happen here, of bringing in a veteran goaltender for a look, not to play in the NHL, but as a sort of veteran mentor for Gillies at the A level.
Well, there's always those type of guys bouncing around, so if necessary, yeah, you could sign one. Like, if they don't decide to sign Schneider, then you could just go and find, you know, insert name of random
Jerry McDonald?
Journeyman. I have no idea.
Is he still playing? Joey McDonald, I just looked it up. He plays for the Schwinniger Wild Wings of the German League. So he's playing over in Germany, probably about his speed. Of these guys on the professional tryout agreements, Ryan Wilson, Aaron Johnson, Douglas Murray, all three of them defensemen, do you think there's any chance that any of them will see significant time in the NHL with the Flames this year?
I think one of them will get signed as the seventh defenseman, sort of like Diaz. And if I had to bet, it would be Wilson.
Okay.
But I could see the Flames bringing either Johnson or Murray in to Stockton just to be that veteran guy.
See, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking that it was going to be more of a veteran AHL player role like Corey Potter was, who was expected to see time here but really didn't last year. I mean, he was that, oh yeah, you're the first call-up, but we didn't have many defensive injuries.
Well, we had enough defensemen to cover those
defensive
injuries.
Yeah, but that's
injuries,
what I mean. Like, we carried enough guys. We didn't need to go to the farm for that. But yeah, no, I think one of them gets a Flames deal, at least. I just don't think that they see much time in a Flaming C.
No, it would be basically like Diaz, whomever of the three wins the job.
See, and
like
I'm not
20,
sure I agree with
games.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that either, because I think that right now there's some young defensemen in the system who I'd want to try out in that role first.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we won't know exactly what level these guys are playing at until we see them in camp. So
I mean, even a guy like Nakladol, I think, could play that 20-30 games a year role. You know, I think
Kenny Morrison might. There's a whole bunch. So it's just seeing who's the best fit for that role.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if one of them gets a job. I just don't think that it'll be here in Calgary.
Yeah.
And of the other tryout players, Bailey, Lomberg, Burke, Marchment, Hurd, Schneider, Riley, and Marcotte, any of them that you think the Flames end up signing to essentially a two-way deal and have them play in the AHL?
Of them, I think Tyson Bailey would be the only guy that the Flames would sign, but I could also see them cutting him and like bringing him back again next year. With him, I firmly believe that if Mangiapane was not drafted before we got him in the sixth round, that Bailey would have been our pick instead. But, you know, it's one of those things that do you sign him or not? And, you know, it's a questionable decision there. You'd have to see a little more from him, that's all.
Yeah, and we know that Flames management likes Bailey. When we talked to the GM and also to Craig Conroy in July, everyone had good things to say about him. He is 20 years old. He's currently playing in the WHL. I can't see him jumping from the WHL to the AHL unless he has a Flames contract, but I think there's a guy that next year you might see, if not by the Flames, by Stockton, or who knows if we'll move our AHL team again by then. But I can definitely see this guy being part of our system in some way next year. I just think it's going to be a tough roster to crack this year. And even if I was Bailey, I don't know that I would sign a deal, because you're probably going to get lost in the A at this point. You know, third, fourth line A player, where maybe you're going to do better is the, I believe he's one of the alternate captains for Kelowna. So maybe you'd be better, you know, playing in the dub for another year. The other guy I can see the Flames giving a good long look to is Majin Marchment.
Yeah, you need truculence.
You do, and I think, you know, he's 6'4", he's 200 pounds. He's 20 as well, so they could sign him. But he's the kind of guy that I wouldn't use a Flames contract on, but I could definitely see ending up in our AHL, maybe, you know, straddling the AHL and the ECHL over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and it's sort of like Ryan Lomberg, where you got somebody that's a hardworking defensive forward. You know, Marchment, he's more of a fisticuffs type guy, where Lomberg's more of a crash and bang type guy, but... you know, you need those quality depth guys, and Lomberg is a lot like Garnett Hathaway from last year. So, you know, you just need to keep cycling those guys through, and, you know, if any of them turn into NHL players, it's found money. And if not, then you've got quality depth on your AHL team.
And Marchment, for those that don't know, is the son of former NHL and former Flame Brian Marchment, and I think that he might get a bit more of a look over a guy like Lomberg just because of the pedigree as well.
True, but Lomberg's already signed, so...
Yeah, no, that's true, but even then, I think that, you know, if, let's say, you had to pick one of those guys to go ECHL, AHL, that sort of thing, I think they might go, okay, let's give Marchment maybe an extra shot or an extra shake there.
Who knows? I think with the AHL contracts, they can't get sent down.
Oh,
so
really?
So I'm not... Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, they're stuck on that roster, period.
I'm not sure about that. We'll look into that, because I'm pretty sure that the AHL can have affiliate deals and send to the E. We'll have to double check. Interesting. Yeah, well, I think there's, even if they can't do it directly, I think I remember seeing in the past that AHL teams could loan a player to the ECHL. I know there's a way they can do it. I'll look into it and see. But I think that, yeah, I think they can maybe loan a player to the ECHL. But, yeah, we'll see. But, yeah, good group of guys. Really nice to see this year. Some of these guys that are in camp and, you know, fighting for a shot. You know, some of these guys, like one of the other walk-on goalies, Kent Simpson, no chance to make it. I mean, our goalie depth is so high. But I think that besides a guy like that, everyone who's there has a chance of playing in this organization somewhere. There's nobody I look at and go, wow, this is a waste of a roster spot.
True.
You know, a guy like Loic Marcotte, probably not going to play a significant role in any team this year, Turner Ellison, but, you know, young players who we're going to give a chance to, and nothing but good things can come from those guys playing, you know, in scrimmages with the NHL guys.
Exactly. And you never know when development's going to happen. Like, nobody would have expected Giordano to become what he is. So, you know, that's why you gotta cycle through all these guys, pick the ones that you think have the best shot, and move forward with them. And if they improve, keep going. If not, move on to the next one.
We were also talking earlier about Kanzig being a bit disappointed and Arnold being a bit more... I guess, as of a surprise. I think this is where we're really going to see what both those guys have too, when we start adding in NHL ready players to these mix and see, you know, like Kanzig is on a team with Brody, Wotherspoon, England, and Johnson, and I think, you know, seeing how he's going to keep up to those guys is really going to be the test. And if you look at Arnold, he's on Team C, Team McCrimmon, with Stajan, Jones, Raymond, Hudler, Klimchuk, and Bennett. So again, if he can keep up with those guys, that's really the telling sign. The rookie tournament only tells you so much, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, for sure. Because you're seeing like with like, not like with NHLs, Ehlers, and, you know, that's a whole different ballgame.
And interesting that they decided to break Arnold and Goudreau up. I thought it might be kind of neat for the Flames to say, hey, let's see these guys back together again, but they've broken them up and put them on to two separate lines.
Well, it's one of those things that you know that they're good together, but you don't want to evaluate Arnold based on Gaudreau, because Gaudreau can make anybody look good.
That's true.
So you want to have a unbiased, this is how good Arnold is, and see from there.
Even when you and I sat down in July and talked about the rookie camp, and we looked at the rosters and said one of the rosters was more stacked than the other, and I'm looking through the training camp rosters for main camp, and I really like the way that they've distributed everybody. They're, you know, they've got enough talent on each team that I don't think you can say that any one team is the best. You know, they've got a good goalie, they got good defensemen, they've all got good forwards. They've broken up, like Goudreau's on Team A. You've got Bennett on Team C. You got Backlund on Team B. Poirier on Team B. I think that they've done a good job of mixing these guys up.
Oh, yeah. And that helps just to be able to evaluate all the players, not just the good ones.
And I think it's also interesting to look at because, to me, it's a hint of who you think might be playing together, who they think might be good pairings. Like, if we look at Team C, we've got Giordano and Hamilton there on defense. Well, you know, we know that Gio's probably going to end up playing with Brody, but I think it's the Flames' way of saying, let's take a look at what those guys look like together. You know,
well, not necessarily, because if you subscribe to the idea of having a left shot and a right shot together, then having Brody and Giordano, that's two left shots.
Yeah, I just don't know you want to break them up with the chemistry they've got, though.
Well, you got to see if Hamilton and Gio can play well, because if that's the case, then you could have... Because we saw at the end of last season that Brody was able to carry a line by himself. So it might be a possibility where you see Gio and Hamilton play together, and possibly either Brody with Englund or Brody with a guy like, say, Kenny Morrison instead of, you know, so that way you have a right-left all the way down the lineup.
Well, and that's interesting, too, that you mentioned Morrison, because I'm just looking at the Team B defenseman here, and we have Russell, Weidman, Seeloff, Morrison, Shillington. So I wouldn't be surprised to see like a Weidman, Morrison, Russell, Shillington set of pairings, which I think would be quite interesting to watch. But yeah, no, I know what you're saying about the right and left, but I don't know, with the chemistry we saw from Gio Brody, unless we're seeing really fantastic chemistry with Gio and Hamilton, I wouldn't break them up.
No, but you always got to try it. That's part of what training camp's all about, is trying new things. And if it doesn't work, like, at least you know that Brody and Gio are good together, so, you know, that wouldn't take long to reestablish itself.
Do you think that in the training camp scrimmages, they put a defensive pairing of England Kanzig together?
No.
Yeah.
No, that would be too slow of a pairing, to be honest. So,
I mean, you got Brody, Wotherspoon, England, Stevenson, Johnson, and Kanzig on Team A. I think you'll see probably Brody, Wotherspoon work together, trying to elevate Wotherspoon a bit. I wouldn't be surprised to see Kanzig play with Johnson, trying to, you know, bring his game up a bit. It's interesting, though, to look at how these are broken down. I'd encourage anybody to take a look at the rosters. Goudreau and Monahan are on one team together. But it's, yeah, I think they've done a really good job. It'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall and hearing the Flames brass figure out who they want where, just because they look, all the teams, like they're really well done. Overall, looking at this roster of 64, 7 goalies, 21 defensemen, 36 forwards, knowing that we have probably 17 to 18 NHL-ready forwards, knowing that we probably have 7 or 8 NHL-ready defensemen and probably 3 NHL-ready goalies, I think it's going to be one of the most interesting training camps that I can ever remember for the Flames.
Yeah, right up there with last year in terms of competition, where it was no holds bar, you know, you want a spot, get it. And it's very much the same thing this year. Like, you got guys like Mason Raymond, who is on the bubble. And, you know, like, he's a $3 million player, but you have 17, 18 guys that are ready for the NHL, and now he has to compete with all of those guys to win one of those 14 spots. So, you know, that's why I'm sure that we'll see a few trades towards the end of training camp, just to clear out some players, just because you don't want to lose them for nothing, and I don't think that they would want to send Raymond down because like that would be a huge disincentive for anybody to sign with Calgary after that.
You know, maybe the disincentive for being scratched this year is they might send all the guys that are scratched to clean up the new arena area. So either on the ice, you're cleaning up the chemicals at the new arena.
Yeah.
The biggest difference I see between this year's camp and last year's camp is last year we had holes. I think that they deliberately engineered that team to say, we have roster spots. It's just a matter of who's going to take them. You know, like we had, you know, we didn't go in with 17 or 18 NHL ready forwards. And I think this year we see a lot more guys that have proven they can do this. And so it's really going to be about making yourself better than the existing guys. And that's, to me, that's the biggest difference we're seeing is last year we had holes like, you know, Diaz, who we all thought, he's not going to make it. And then he did because there was a hole there and nobody else was more spectacular. But to me, when I look at the team, I don't see any position and go, we need somebody in this position. And it's just going to be the best of the rest, if that makes sense.
Oh, for sure. And that's where having the competition helps. And, you know, the top 14 forwards will likely be the 14 that make the team. And same with the defensemen, the top 7 or 8 will make the team and so on.
And that's where I think that even a guy after last year, like Granlund or Shore, probably would have come into camp thinking, oh yeah, I got a job locked up. But when you look at the depth, those guys are going to have to work hard to keep their bubble spots.
Yeah. And that's why, like, I wouldn't be opposed if the Flames decided to move, like, a package deal for a better player. Like, sort of like how Los Angeles, like, they traded Simmons, Shen, and a second-round pick for Mike Richards at the time, and then traded for Carter after that. I think the Flames are going to be closely approaching the point in their development where, okay, we only have X number of spots and we have too many in-between guys that are good players, but we just don't have the roster spots for them.
Well, and even a more recent deal than that, the one that just came down today where the Leafs acquired Grabner for pretty much five AHL guys.
Yeah, well, that's a little different because all five of those players are not very good. So.
But I mean, you could do something like that of saying, here's a package of bubble guys, send them to a rebuilding team and take back a significant piece.
Yeah. And I think that you could see that happen. And
I think the cool thing about that too, is it really gives us that flexibility to say, okay, maybe we say, you know what? We're not happy with the way the blue line's shaping out. So we've got guys we can move to do that. Or if we're happy, we keep everybody.
Like an example of a deal that might make some sense would be to trade, like, say a guy like Matt Stajan or one of the higher dollar contracts plus some prospects to Arizona for Michael Bodker, who is wanting to be a UFA next year and doesn't want to re-sign in Arizona, but, you know, would be an upgrade on a few of the players. So
I'd be happy to have Bodker here.
So something along those lines where, you know, they're in a tight spot because he doesn't want to play there anymore, and he's a he only signed a 1-year deal so he can get out after this season.
And you were mentioning before Raymond, Stajan, both of whom are making about $3.1 million. I mean, we've known that both those were high contract deals, but we're like, okay, these are proven NHL guys. But yeah, again, I agree with you that I think we're seeing guys like Juris, guys like Shore, guys like Granlund, you know, who we can say these guys could legitimately take those jobs. So I'm hoping we're going to see Stajan and Raymond come out, you know, all guns blazing, saying this is my job and I have to defend it.
Like, worst case scenario is that some of these players will get traded off and somebody else will be coming in. So, you know, we'll see. A lot of things will happen in the next 2 weeks. It'll be a little maddening for how many things will assumptions will be changed.
Yeah, and I mean, like, Stajan again last year probably wasn't worried about his job because he was one of the few NHL-ready centers, but there was jobs behind him. And this year, if somebody like Shore wants a job or somebody like, Arnold wants a job, they have to knock that guy out. Like, there isn't a roster spot for them. You have to be better than Matt Stajan.
Yeah. And, you know, like my example with Bodker, a team like Arizona, they need some veteran leadership and all that. So a guy like Stajan wouldn't be a bad idea.
And Stajan is known to be a good leadership guy.
Yeah. So, you know, there are things where it would make some sense. So we'll see. I'm sure that, I'm not saying trade Matt Stajan.
We also have to trade one of our masked men, too. I mean, we can't go into the season with an Ordiaramo Hiller trio.
No. And honestly, I think that will be largely incumbent on the play of Ordio. If he plays like he did the first month of the last 2 years,
he's been terrible. He got demoted to the ECHL 2 years ago.
He'll go down to Stockton and nobody would claim him because, you know, just look at his numbers.
Maybe there's a strategic advantage to sit the kid down and go, all right, we need terrible play out of you, boy.
Yeah, but no, I'm assuming that he will make the team and the Flames will just try and find somewhere to ship one of the other two goalies, figure out which one's playing better.
Well, and we'll see how camp turns out in that respect. But to me, Ramo has responded better to pressure since he's been a Flame than Hiller has. I mean, if you look at Ramo when he was here at first and he had McDonald's backup, you know, he wasn't that great. As soon as they brought in Red O'Bara and there was a challenge, he got better. As soon as they brought in Hiller and there's a challenge, he got better. So I think if you're looking at the roster and he thinks, crap, Ordio might steal my job, I think he's going to be the one that will rise to the occasion.
Yeah. Plus, with Hiller, you know what he is. Like, he's a 31, 32-year-old veteran. He is what he is. Like, he's not going to get better. He's Hiller, and that's it. So, you know, if Ramo isn't very good in preseason, then you look at getting rid of him. If Hiller's the one that's not looking as good, you move him. There's always options, and I'm sure with either contract, the Flames would eat half just to move the deal to some other team. But
if you have to, I mean, I think the kind of guys, like, you know, if you're talking about a Bodker, you're moving a decent value for a decent value, so I don't even know if you'd have to.
Well, I don't think that the deal for like a guy like Bodker would involve one of the goalies. I think that would be a
no, but even if you move a guy like a Stajan or something like that, you free up, say, $3 million maybe, and then you can definitely afford to, absorb as much of that or as little as you want.
Yeah. And the good thing with the goalie contracts is they're both over at the end of the year. So, you know, even if you do eat half, oh, big deal. You know, like, it's not affecting next year's cap at all.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's the nice thing about the goalies. Even if the Flames say, you know what we really need is a goalie who can take us to the playoffs, and these are the two guys we think can do it, it's your way of saying to Ordio, you're up next year.
It would just, like everything, it depends on how the players respond. And who knows, like this time next year, the two goalies might be Gillies and Ordio starting the year. So who knows?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we didn't expect to acquire a guy like Hamilton. Maybe the Flames go out and acquire another goaltender that nobody's expecting. It's like, wow. You know, that goalie landscape is completely changed by this time next year.
Who knows who's available? And, like, I don't think anybody thought that Hamilton would be available, especially for what we got him for. But, sometimes things fall in your lap. And, you know, it's random, and it happens. Like, you know, I would have gladly taken the Nick Leddy trade last year that the Islanders did with Chicago, but that didn't work out, and instead we got Hamilton.
Going into this training camp, I feel, as long as we've been doing this podcast at least, I feel the most confident about not just the on-ice team, but the off-ice team that the Flames have. I think that Treliving is one of the best things to have happened in this franchise off-ice in a long time. You know, we know that Hartley's great. He's coming in as coach of the year. But I really feel like everything's going right off ice, and I have complete confidence, which I can't say in the past, of Treliving to make the right move, whatever that is. Whoever he thinks he's going to move, I don't have this nagging feeling with him of, you know what, maybe this is going to get screwed up. Like, I have complete confidence in this guy to do the right thing.
So you're not waiting for the shoe to drop and like, oh no, everything's ruined?
Well, not even the shoe to drop, but you know, sometimes there's been GMs where you go, okay, this guy just can't pull off the big deal. Like, you know, even look at Sutter. At the beginning, he was making really interesting deals, like when we brought in Kipper and, you know, guys like that. And then by the end, it's like, okay, don't make a trade because you'll probably mess things up. And with even with Feaster, he did some interesting things, but I was never 100% satisfied with him. I was never at the point where I said, okay, this guy knows exactly what he's doing. And with Treliving, I guess he hasn't given me a reason to doubt him yet.
Yeah, like even the so-called mistake contracts from last year, like the Bolig acquisition, Raymond, Englund, Hiller. Like, if the Flames didn't have Hiller and, say, Bolig, I don't know as if the Flames make the playoffs, because the leadership, especially from Bolig, knowing what Chicago did, that probably helped a lot.
Well, that's it. On paper, those guys weren't good, but, like, Treliving has shown us that he can build a team.
Yeah,
you know, like, exactly. Yes, on paper we might say, okay, Bolig's overpaid, or, you know, we shouldn't have signed him or whatever, but, you know, he's shown that he knows how to bring everybody together and make a team that
is successful.
Yeah, and that he can take pieces that no one's expecting to be part of that and put them together, and he understands what type of player he needs to sign. Too often we see a GM who says, this is the player I got, and goes to his coach and says, figure out how to make him work.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And, like, you look at the acquisitions of Frolik and Hamilton, like, the Flames had bad possession numbers last year. And as much as I'm not really a fan of Corsi and PDO and all that stuff, you know, it is important to be able to control the play a little better. And those two players are two of the top players in the entire NHL in that regard. So at least that should help alleviate some of that problem.
And I think, you know, last year when we looked at Treliving coming in, we were worried that he might be end up being a puppet for Brian Burke. And I think that the opposite has happened. I mean, I don't even look at his work and say this has any of Burke's fingerprints on it.
No, like the Bolig move did, but that's about it.
And for all we know, the Bolig move was orchestrated by Burke, and Treliving just pulled the trigger because he was in charge at that point. But yeah, I mean, if you look at, and I think too, when you look at a GM's body of work, you look at the overall body. And even though, yeah, okay, maybe a guy like Bolig we overpaid for, it's not like we were at a cap crunch and we had to move somebody for that. But when you look at like the contracts he's got on defense, overall, you know, this guy's done no wrong.
No, I can't argue with that. Like, all the contracts that he's signed have been for less than what they should have
gotten. I would happily take another Brian Bolig if, and being able to sign Johnny Gaudreau for the same type of contract we've seen this summer.
Worrying about the cap for next season, the Flames have about $40 million tied up in players that are movable. So, you know, like, even though the Flames, I do believe their cap space is like $3 million. Yeah, $3.05 million right now.
Yeah, but we're also in the off season where they do some weird calculations on that.
Yeah, but even then, you know, you can move even like three or four guys, like, say, Hiller and Ramo, at, you know, have them both leave at the end of the year and have Gillies and Ordeo in. And right there, you've saved like $7 million just from that, and you haven't really reduced anything from your goaltending.
According to what I'm looking at, the Flames cap hit is $49.6 million, which gives them $21 million to work with.
So, you know, there's always ways of being able to maneuver around. And
well, and to me, the big contract that I was saying almost you got to save the money for is done, and that's Gio. Hamilton's done. Brody's done. So really, if you look at where they're going to say, we got to save our money, it's going to be Gaudreau and Monahan.
Yeah, but even then, those guys, like, their cap hits are already like close to $2 million. So
they're both making 925.
that salary, but for cap hit, they're 1.85 for Gaudreau and 1.775 for
Monahan. Even if you were to shoot and say we're going to pay them both 7.5, so we put $15 million aside, worst case scenario, you still got a lot of money to play with.
Exactly. And like, you could easily sign Hudler and not be affected, because, you know, Hudler's only going to probably get around 6 if he takes a 5-year deal.
And Dave Jones is making 4, and I don't think he'll be back at nearly that next year if he comes back. So there's 4 that we can play with.
Yeah, and if you trade one of Raymond or Stajan or even Russell and Weidman, you know, that too frees up money. So,
you know, Hiller and Ramo, we got almost $8 million between those two.
So, like, everything, it'll require trades, but there's nothing that is overly concerning. Like, even Mason Raymond making 3.15, well, that's an average contract in terms of cap hit for the NHL. So, you know, and he's only got 1 year left after this one. So, like, any team that's, like, in a rebuild situation, big deal, you know, if they can use him for the year and get a third round pick for him at that trade deadline, hey, that's great.
I can't think of any team in the NHL that you look down their roster and go, every player on this team has what we as fans would deem an acceptable contract. Everybody's got a guy that maybe they paid a little bit more than they should have, or, you know, contract they took on that they shouldn't have to get something back. And to me, I mean, like you said, we got Raymond, we got Stage, and maybe you could put Jones in that category. If you look at it, we're doing pretty good there, and they're easily movable, or you let the guy walk and we take the cap space. You know, we don't need to go out and unload anybody quickly. We're not like Chicago a few years ago when they moved like Andrew Ladd to Winnipeg, where it's, crap, we need to do something now because we're out of cap space.
Yeah, or like moving Saad this past offseason, yeah. Or Campbell, or Boland.
And if we manage things correctly, we won't be in that position for at least 2-3 years.
Yeah. Well, that's why, like, I'm hoping that the Flames, when they do sign Gaudreau and Monahan, that it's for, like, a 5-6-year contract, even if they have to pay him a little bit more, just so, like, it's in that same range of expiration with Hamilton, Brody, and Giordano. So that way, like, that whole section of time, the Flames are competitive, and you don't need to worry because their cap hits are low enough where you can build a supporting cast for like that 5-6 year run.
Yeah, exactly. You've got your pieces, then you can put the supporting cast in, you know how much you have to play with.
Yeah, and then you got guys coming up afterwards like Jankowski, you know, Anderson, Shillington, yada yada yada, that can replace players that you do have to move out. So,
and to me, that's how you build a team. You say, these are the top guys. You know, we've got our three guys who are making the most in the blue line. We're going to have after this season our two guys at forward. And you say, you know what? You want to make their money, play like them. You know, I'm not paying you more than this guy because he's the best defenseman I got. You know, and I think it establishes a value too. You know, you're half of what this guy was, so you get 3.2 because that's half of what he's making, you know? I think it established that value within your team, which I don't think is something the Flames have really been able to do for a couple of years. We've had a lot of pieces we've acquired and contracts we've taken on, and I feel like Treliving's the first GM who will probably be around long enough since, you know, Sutter, to really start to put his value on these players.
Especially like with both the forwards and the defensemen, like you can start seeing like guys like Englund, Russell, Smead, Weidman, like now that you've got your top three, do you necessarily need to allocate, you know, the close to $20 million or $12-15 million for those four? So could that be better used and reallocate their funds for somebody else? So, you know, it'll all be fungible and changed for the next couple of seasons. And we'll see Treliving put more of a stamp on exactly what he wants at each of those positions.
For sure. Last year is about who is going to win a spot, and I think the cool thing to watch over the next couple of years here is going to be who's going to earn somebody else's spot.
Yeah, and how do you best build a contending team? Like, I think now that the Flames have three dynamite defensemen under contract for the next 5-6 years, now you've got the nucleus. And you've got Gaudreau and Monahan and hopefully Bennett. Okay, now let's build the last handful of pieces that you need around those guys in order to build a cup team.
And I think now's where you can play a little bit safer and maybe take, I don't want to say take more risks, but you know, you're not looking at a guy maybe like they would have with a Chris Russell saying, okay, maybe this guy can be our number three. You go, we have our top three, so we can look for bona fide four fives.
Yeah. Exactly. And like that's why guys that are coming up like Hickey, Morrison, Wotherspoon, like you will see them getting time this year and next to see if they can become that four guy or the fifth guy or the sixth guy. And that way you can use their cheap contracts, move out the more expensive versions, and allocate the funds to, say, like signing Bennett or whomever. Whatever the last pieces are that you would need to be a cup contender.
And I think, too, talking about, you know, expensive contracts, I think this year, if you look at the way the free agent market shake down, I think that we're seeing a shift in the NHL that we haven't seen yet, which is if you're a big contract, you have to perform. I mean, seeing guys like Franson still unsigned, seeing guys like Glenn Gross.
Well, he signed with Buffalo.
Oh, did he?
Actually, yeah, okay. 3.2 for 2 years.
When did that happen?
Last week or so.
But even seeing guys like, you know, the three guys the Flames are bringing in, seeing guys like Glenn Cross unsigned, I think you're really showing that if you have a big contract, you have to earn it.
Yeah. And, well, like even Talusti, who was pretty good, he only got a $750,000 contract on a 1 year with New Jersey.
I think that the NHL is about to become a lot more forgiving than it ever has been before, where you're going to be judged on what you did last year, not, oh, look at this guy, he had a bad year, but look at all the great years he had here. I think we're about to get into a scenario where, you know, you got to play hard every year, or you're going to lose your deal.
Yeah. Look at Glenn Cross. Like, he was on track to be a $4 million player, and instead he's on a tryout. Just because he had a bad couple of months with Washington.
Well, I'd say he had a bad season with Calgary, too.
Oh, for sure. But like it was like capped off by a rather dreadful time in the Capitals organization.
Yeah, and that's where I think it's not just going to be anymore what we've seen from some players of, oh, it's contract year, I'm going to have a great year. Like, I think, you know, that's definitely going to be more we're going to see that because they want to make sure the last impression was good. But I also think it's going to be one of these things of, you know what, you haven't been good up till that contract year. I'm just going to pay, you know, some kid $600,000 to come play in your spot.
Yeah. And especially with a lot of teams having players that are capable of taking spots.
Good enough to play in your bottom six.
Yeah. Like, look at Chicago and their cycling of random so-so players, and they won the Stanley Cup, and their bottom pairing defensemen were terrible, all of them.
The more I look around the league, the more names I see and I go, who is this guy?
Exactly.
The guys are coming and going so quickly these days, so I think especially in a team like Calgary with so much depth, you got to be on your game 100% of the time or you're gone.
Yeah, and especially with having such depth, like even moving a guy like Smead, even though he's been injured, that 3.5 for 2 years isn't particularly terrible, and some team out there would take a risk on that. So, you know, it's one of those things that competition, it will breed the best success for the Flames, and we'll be seeing a lot of various veterans move out because of the fact that either there's cheap options or better options, either through trade or whatever.
Well, Matt, let's give some final thoughts and sign off for this week. We will talk again as the preseason gets underway and we start to see some of these players and what we can evaluate for them and hopefully have a better report for all of our listeners on what's going on at camp.
Yep, and I will be at Winsport the next 3 days covering the training camp as best as I can, so I'll be posting on all of the places that I normally do, Twitter, Reddit, HF boards, Calgary Puck.
And all those places are just links back to firesidechat.ca, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to follow Matt, follow what's going on at training camp, go to firesidechat.ca. As always, throughout the whole season, that's where you can find out what's going on with the Flames. You can hear the show. You can get the information. That's where everything will be. And I think there's really not a lot we can do except for speculate until the next show, and hopefully we'll have some more concrete answers by then.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll be able to, like, we'll have a couple of games under our belt by the next time we talk, so we'll definitely be able to get a better idea of what's going on, who's been cut, all that kind of
stuff. Would you be surprised if by the next time we talk, we see a trade?
No, not at all. I could honestly see 3 or 4 trades happening before the season starts.
If I know Treliving's body of work, he's probably got 3 or 4 trades in the can, ready to go, and he's just waiting to see, okay, this guy's not playing up to expectations, pull the trigger.
Yeah, or this guy is, like, say in Ordeo's case, he is playing up to expectations, okay, pull a deal on the goalie trade.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, knowing what he does and how he works, I think he's got a pulse on what everybody needs, and he's probably got a couple deals that are pretty close to being done. And probably waiting for other teams to start camp, too, and go, okay, we really do need another winger. Didn't you say you had one over here?
Oh, I know. And plus Calgary, like, I'm pretty sure that everybody knows that the Flames have, like, 18 guys that are ready for the NHL. So,
well, and you know, it's also known that Treliving does a lot of calling around. I've heard that every day he calls every GM just to make, you know, just to talk, to see what they're doing, see what they need, see what their strengths and weaknesses are. So he's going to have a pulse on, okay, these guys are looking for a left winger. Geez, none of your guys panned out. You want mine?
Yeah. And we have 5 to choose from. Here you go.
Or even you just say, the only one I got's Raymond.
Will that work for you? And, you know.
And I think, you know, you're not in a desperate sale position, so it's take it or leave it. Here's the deal.
Yeah. And you got 29 teams all with their own shopping list, so who knows? There's lots of interesting things to come.
Well, Matt, enjoy the next couple days of training camp and enjoy the first part of exhibition games next week. You and I will be at the game on Monday and hopefully enjoying the first of the, what I'd classify the new era of the Battle of Alberta. Both teams have strengthened their front office. They're on ice, and I'm hoping that we're going to have some really interesting battles of Alberta to come.
And I still hope that we beat the tar out of them.
The last couple years, I haven't found the Battle of Alberta to be fun.
No.
And as a kid growing up, that was always one of the funnest parts of Flames hockey was, you know, competitive games against the Oilers. And I'm hoping we can get back there. Even if sometimes the game is close. I mean, sometimes the most interesting part is watching a close game.
Not an 8-2 blowout or something like that.
And speaking of exhibition games, I was hearing an interview with Brian Burke, who said that in the exhibition, they might be doing a 3-on-3 overtime every game.
Yeah,
just to show fans.
I've heard that as well. Plus, they did that back when they introduced the shootout, just so that they allowed teams to be able to figure out how to do it properly and how best to coach those things. So
if anyone's going to the exhibition games, you'll get a bit of a treat, and you'll probably get, I doubt it'll be on TV if you were to watch it on NHL Network or anywhere. But if you're live, I bet you'll get to see the 3-on-3 overtime. So enjoy that if you go. It's a bit of a treat. Hopefully we won't see many 3-on-3 overtimes this year. I'd like to settle everything in regulation so we can keep the 2 points and give everybody else none. But enjoy the next week, Matt, and we'll talk to you soon.
Fireside Chat is edited by Mike Crosby and Brett Bauer. This show is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license information, visit firesidechat.ca.